You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
There's so much I could talk about at the top of this week's show. There's just so much to rant about, so much in the news. But a few weeks ago, I promised you all something light, something fun at the top of an upcoming show. And I really haven't delivered on that promise. And some of you out there in Twitter land have noticed, like Jer P, who tweeted at me, "I thought you were supposed to talk about something fun at the top of the show today." I wrote back to Jer P and said, "I'm sorry, I wanted to, but events kept intervening, shit kept happening, and shit keeps happening. But you know what? I'm going to come through for you guys this week. Something fun. I am going to talk about something light. I am not going to talk about all the crap in the news this week, like the fact that Scott Walker wants to build a wall around Canada. Maybe if he's Donald Trump's running mate, we will have a wall along our border with Canada and a wall along our border with Mexico, and then we will all be safely tucked inside our country with all our guns, where nothing bad can ever happen to us ever again. And I'm not going to talk about the fact that Chris Christie wants to hire the founder of FedEx, which always knows where your packages are, to keep track of immigrants with presumably barcodes and warehouses and locked trucks, which is how they always know where your package is. And I'm not going to talk about the fact that Ben Carson, who condemned fetal cell research, was revealed to have conducted fetal cell research himself. And his poll numbers in the GOP race for the presidential nomination promptly doubled at the same time the GOP base is calling on congressional Republicans to shut down the government because they are so very outraged that Planned Parenthood is legally making fetal tissue available to researchers like Ben Carson. Maybe the ultimate example of I-O-K-I-Y-A-R. Google it if you don't know what that means. And I'm not going to talk about the ongoing fallout from the Ashley Madison hack, and I'm not going to talk about those very straight, very religious polygamists who are suing for the right to marry, or the supporters of quote-unquote biblical marriage who are blaming the gays for this. Spoiler alert, this won't be a spoiler for anyone who's actually ever opened a Bible, but all of the marriages in the Old Testament are polygamous. And the New Testament urges Christians not to marry anyone at all. So really, biblical marriages, supporters of biblical marriage, are plural or non-existent. Pick one, supporters of biblical marriage, but you can't pin this on the gays. And I'm not going to talk about the raid on the offices of rentboy.com, a website for male escorts and their male clients, conducted for some mysterious reason by the Department of Homeland Security, which is now protecting us from well-hung twinks and muscle daddies with shaved titties. Lots of people are out there talking about it, including the editorial board of the New York Times, which condemned it. I'm not going to talk about any of those things. I'm going to talk about some things that are fun and light, like exploding kittens. That's fun. It's a new card game from Ellen Lee, Shane Small, and Matthew Immon, who is the genius behind the comics website The Oatmeal. It's great. It's fun. My husband and I are huge fans of card games, hearts, spades, cribbage, schnapsen. So when Matthew Immon, again, the guy behind the brilliant The Oatmeal, combined forces with these game designers and announced a Kickstarter campaign for this new card game, we kicked in right away. They hoped to raise $10,000. They wound up raising nearly $9 million selling this card game, producing it for people. It's genius. It's really fucking fun. We've been playing it constantly since we got it in the mail, and I recommend it. You want something fun at the top of the show? There you go. Exploding kittens. Lots of fun. Also fun. With all the talk about cheating, the Ashley Madison hack, and sex workers getting busted, the rent boy bust, it was fun for me personally this week to get an update from a reader, a satisfied Savage Love customer who happens to be a sex worker who got married this weekend to her long-term boyfriend. That was one of the things I helped her with. She was doing sex work. Her boyfriend was having a problem with that. We talked about it. It helped. They're still together. Now they're married, which I would like to throw in the face of everyone out there who says that marriage is somehow antithetical to writing your own rules or being a sex radical or doing your own thing, and that if you marry, you have to be monogamous or you're signing up for that or endorsing that. Not necessarily so. Marriage is whatever the two people who are married to each other say that it is. It is only as oppressive an institution as any individual couple elects to make it. And I don't think this couple is going to elect to make their marriage oppressive. but she wrote to say that they married this weekend, and among the guests, one of her former long-term clients and his wife, who knows and approves of their relationship because it helped them through a hard time themselves where their marriage was collapsing, they weren't connecting sexually, they both agreed that they could do what they needed to do, as I say, to stay married and stay sane. And rather than trawl Ashley Madison, rather than hit up a million people, he saw this one particular sex worker who, she writes in her email, told him he was being shitty to his wife. Not by seeing her, but by the other stuff that was going on in the marriage. This sometimes happens. You talk to sex workers all the time, and they will tell you that maybe the sex takes 10 minutes, and then there's 40 minutes left, and it's all conversation, or 50 minutes left, and it's talk. So many sex workers wind up being marriage counselors on the side, wind up being therapists, wind up helping their clients work on their social skills. So then this man went home and told his wife the things that the sex worker that he had been seeing regularly was telling him about him when he confided in her about their marriage and that she was siding with the wife in the dispute. And that helped open his eyes. It helped them reconnect, this conversation this man was having, ongoing conversation this man was having with his sex worker. So at her wedding this weekend, 4 years after her professional relationship with this man ended, among the guests, this man and his grateful wife. We hear about stuff when it doesn't work on this show. We hear about the problems. We hear about marriages destroyed by cheating, for example. We rarely hear about the ones saved by them. Some are saved. People call in, people write when they have issues. People don't write so often, don't call in so often when everything's going just fine. It can skew our sample, can make us seem like sex is always a problem, like everything would be just hunky-dory rosy if everybody kept their pants on at all times. Sometimes sex, though, it's the solution. All right, there you go. Two fun things, exploding kittens and sex workers. We got married this weekend. I think those are both really fun things, especially sex workers who got married this weekend with clients and their spouses in attendance. Also fun today, tons of your questions, and coming up on the Magnum, Mark Oppenheimer, one of the hosts of the new podcast Unorthodox, brought to us by Tablet. We have a conversation about Jewy things and Christy things and sexy things, all on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/savage and entering the promo code SAVAGE.
This episode is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Squarespace features an elegant interface, beautiful templates, and incredible 24/7 customer support. Try Squarespace at squarespace.com and enter offer code SAVAGE at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, build it beautiful.
Say goodbye to your sore throat, your cold, your allergy symptoms with the oxygen-powered relief of OxyBump. All natural and unique, only OxyBump harnesses the power of oxygen to treat nasal congestion and sore throat. Infused with the finest sourced plant and mineral extracts, OxyBump provides safe, non-addictive relief of congestion, allergies, cold, and sore throat. It's available nationwide at Target. Just look for the brightly colored boxes in the cough, cold, allergy aisle, or go to oxybump.com and enter the code SL20 for 20% off. OxyBump, oxygen-powered relief.
Hi, Dan. This is a 29-year-old straight male. My partner and I have been in an open relationship for about 3 years now. Both of us have had the pleasure to meet someone outside of our relationship who happened to be the same person. We both fell in love with her. She's returned that love, and we are moving in together. And it's awesome, and it's great, and I couldn't be happier. With this move prompted my partner and I to come out to our families. I came out to my mother about the open relationship. She seemed to receive it well, and then a couple of days pass, and I get an email from her saying that she essentially doesn't want anything to do with my fiancé or my other partner. This is absolutely devastating. She's basically blaming my partner, my partners, for corrupting me stating that I used to have morals and that I've been on the steady decline and yada, yada, yada. My mother is a wonderful woman, but she has always been homophobic. So I have a feeling that she is uncomfortable learning that my partner is queer, who is also in love with another woman. So I'm trying to write my response to this email. It's really broken my heart over the last week. I've been bouncing back and forth about what I want to say to her. Basically, what I want to say is, well, you can't see me if you can't handle seeing my partner. I want to be more lenient about our tertiary partner because I know it's not typical, and I kind of want to ease her into this process, but she doesn't seem to be wanting to deal with anybody. She said she would still see me when I came to visit and wants nothing to do with my partner, who we've been together for 5 years. Our partner together, we've all been together for about 2 years. So my mother has met my partner over and over and again, says she loves her, says she is happy to have her part of the family, and now this. So any help you could give, any advice you have that I could say back to my mother in this email would be greatly appreciated.
It never ceases to amaze me how similar the place right now in family dynamics and culturally that poly people find themselves in is to where gay people were 10, 20, 30 years ago, and even some gay people today are. So I'm going to give you the advice that I give to gay young people and lesbian young people and bi young people when they're coming out to their families and their families have their big shit fit, is that you tell your mom that you will listen to her. You will see her. She doesn't have to see your partner if she doesn't want to for a year, that she has a year to have her tantrum. She has a year to do some reading. She has a year to think about this. And then if she wants to continue to see you, continue to have you in her life, she's got to get the fuck over it. And this is, I'm not telling you to do anything. I'm not telling you to stick a knife in your primary partner or your tertiary partner. I'm not telling you to do anything I haven't really told lots of gay guys to do. You say to mom, okay, and dad, okay, I realize this is really hard for you. Tell you what, let's make a deal. I won't rub your nose in it. I'm not going to bring my boyfriend around for a year. Here are the books I want you to read. Here are the conversations that we're going to have, and I want to keep communicating. But at the end of this year, if you want to see me, if you want me in your life, you got to get over this shit. In a circumstance like this, where a parent is being homophobic, where a parent is not accepting her child's own agency in her child-adult relationships. And again, this is shit that happened to gay people 30, 40 years ago. A gay kid would come out and the parents would blame the partner. Gay kid would come out because he had a boyfriend or they were in a long-term serious relationship when people were only coming out in their late 20s and 30s. Often it was because they had never married and they were in a long-term relationship. They would come out and the parents would look at their kid who just told them that they were gay, and then their eyes would go to the boyfriend or the partner and blame him for what he did to their kid. You turned my kid gay. Oh my God. And they would direct all their hate and rage at the partner. That's exactly what your mother is doing right now. She is not happy about the fact that you are in a polyamorous, committed, stable relationship. But she doesn't want to be mad at you because she wants to have a relationship with you. So she's going to be mad at your fiancé because that relationship she could take or leave. And the trick is to convince your mother that the relationship she has with you now that you're an adult comes bundled together with the relationship she must have with your partner. But you're going to model for your mother some qualities your mother isn't modeling for you right now. Patience, compassion, understanding. You understand this is difficult for her. You're going to give her a year. You're going to be patient during that year. And you're going to be compassionate. Just acknowledging that this is difficult for her, just telling her that you understand that this is difficult for her, and that's why you're going to give her some time, is the compassionate thing to fucking do. And at the end of that year, you expect the same in return. That she will be patient and compassionate and understanding. That she will accept these women as your partners. And if she can't, then you are going to see a whole lot less of her. You're going to be a whole lot less involved in her life than you are now. Because you're an adult, and these people are important to you, and you are not going to saw them off every time you want to see your mom or every time your mom wants to come over to your house or whatever else. Your family is accepted into the whole family or not, but you won't be compartmentalized like this. In the same way that some gay guy 30 years ago with a boyfriend was right to tell his parents that he wasn't going to go to his sister's wedding without his partner, that he wasn't going to come home for Christmas without his boyfriend. And that's what changed so many families around the gay shit, was the gay kid drawing a line in the sand. And you now, at this stage, poly people, you have to draw that same line in the sand with your families. You have to use the leverage that you have at your disposal to bring them around, just as we brought our families around.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 23-year-old woman currently dating this 26-year-old guy for the past 2 or 3 months. It started out pretty casual, but now it's definitely moving more towards the relationship. And I really like him, and he likes me. It's going very well, except for a problem we're having in bed. He really wants me to be, like, very vocal and talk dirty and basically, like, yelling. And I'm a person, I'm not quiet, but I'm not yelling by any means. And I just feel like it's a lot of pressure, and I feel like if I do that, I'm just putting on some acts for him, and it really takes me out of the moment. It's just not my thing. I don't like talking dirty, and, you know, I've tried it. I just don't like it. It's not for me. But he seems very insistent on this and seems to think it's more of a problem with me being inhibited or something. So I'm starting to think maybe this is just a deal breaker. I don't know if it's something I should just try for him or if he's being a dick.
Try for him or is he being a dick? One of those instances where it might not be an either or question. You could try for him, and he could be being a dick about this, but that doesn't mean necessarily you shouldn't try for him, maybe, if he's not being too colossal a dick about it. What I would tell you, and I would tell him, is to stop framing this as talk dirty to me or scream or yell in bed, and instead to frame it as let's talk to each other. Let's fuck and converse simultaneously. The key, again, as always, to beginner training wheel dirty talk in bed is to tell them what you're going to do, tell them what you're doing, tell them what you just did. I'm going to fuck the shit out of you. I am fucking the shit out of you. I just fucked the shit out of you. If you are someone who's shy about dirty talk and your partner is the one who wants you to make with the dirty talk, then your partner has to take some responsibility for eliciting that. That's where the conversation comes in. That's where, instead of him prompting you, him asking you simple questions that don't give you performance anxiety around you saying just the right sort of dirty talk thing that's going to tap right into whatever part of his reptile brain needs that dirty talk. So he says to you, instead of waiting for you to say, I am going to fuck you, I am fucking you, I just fucked you, he says to you, what are you going to do? What are we doing? What are you doing to me? What are you doing? And you answer the question simply. What are you doing? I am licking your balls. How hard is that to say? Just very descriptive, very matter of fact. But the funny thing about I am licking your balls is it sounds like dirty talk when someone's balls are in your mouth. It really does. It can't not sound like anything else when someone's balls are in your mouth or near your mouth or were just in your mouth and you then pop them out to say that. It's going to sound filthy, even though it's pretty simple and merely descriptive. So give yourself permission to be merely descriptive. And he needs to take some responsibility for drawing out of you the sorts of things he'd like to hear by asking you the right sort of kind, gentle baby step questions.
If you need to build a website or think it's time to improve the one that you have, then I suggest you use Squarespace. They make it so easy to put together a truly lovely and well-functioning website quickly. Everything is drag and drop, so it's easy, and they have tons of templates to choose from so you can make your site your own. It's trusted by millions of people and some of the most respected brands in the world. And you can afford it. It starts at $8 a month, and you get a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Start your free trial today with no credit card required at squarespace.com. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure to use the offer code SAVAGE to get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace. Build it beautiful.
Hey, Dan. I'm a straight male looking to get into pegging and anal sex with my fiancé. I've done quite a bit of research into all things anal and feel comfortable with rimming and how to have the sex, but I've run into conflicting information regarding the cleaning of the anus. Many suggest using anal douches or enemas, but I found others who claim that their use can make your body dependent on them to have bowel movements, as well as putting you at risk for STIs. Help?
The Bible for this sort of thing back in the 80s and 90s was Dr. Jack Morin's groundbreaking book, Anal Pleasure and Health. You might want to pick up a copy. You don't want to use commercial douches. You don't want to use soaps. You don't want to use anything that might irritate your delicate little tissues back there. But some water and a douche bulb, just plain lukewarm or slightly warm water and a douche bulb, it isn't going to make you dependent on douching to have bowel movements, because you're not going to get the water far enough up your butt to draw anything out that isn't already close to coming out anyway, or far down in your GI tract, far enough down that you need to eliminate it before you shove something else up in there. A lot of people don't need to douche at all. They are regular, they get a lot of fiber in their diet, and they're self-aware enough and they know their bodies well enough to know when they're empty, to know when they're good to go. And just some experimentation solo with sex toys or fingers will help you to determine whether you are one of those people who can make that kind of guess or determination about yourself and your butt and whether it's good to go. But if you want the confidence of knowing for sure you're good to go, just a douche bulb and some water, fill yourself up, empty yourself out, fill yourself up, empty yourself out until it's clear. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Casper. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost. They are revolutionizing the mattress industry by cutting the cost of dealing with resellers and showrooms and passing those savings directly on to you. Casper's mattress is an obsessively engineered mattress at a very fair price. It's a comfortable mattress with just the right sink and bounce with long-lasting comfort and support. And it is indeed the mattress that I, myself, and my husband, we sleep on together. There's a story behind that. Casper offered to send us a free mattress to try out. We already had a mattress. We had them send it to a friend's house. And then we went and stayed at our friend's house and slept on that mattress and liked it so much we bought ourselves one. We paid our own cash money out of our own pockets for it. And we forgot to use the promo code SAVAGE because we are idiots. So we didn't get the discount that you can get. Buy a Casper mattress easily and online and risk-free. Casper understands the importance of truly trying out a mattress, like Terry and I got to, that in all reality you will spend a third of your life on. So they offer free delivery and painless returns within a 100-day period. And you can use those 100 days well, so you don't have to lie down in a showroom. You can lie down in your own bedroom to try out their mattresses. And those Casper mattresses are made right here in the USA. Get a Casper mattress for $500 for a twin or $950 for a king-sized mattress, and you can save an additional $50. As one of our listeners, all you got to do is go to casper.com/savage, where you will enter the promo code SAVAGE. That's casper.com/savage and promo code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 23-year-old heterosexual female in a large East Coast city, and I had a question about anal sex. I've been dating my boyfriend for a little over a year, and I'm completely in love with him. We have a pretty active sex life, and recently we started experimenting with anal sex. His ex-girlfriend was really into hardcore, rough sex, and he got used to it, and he really likes it, and I often find us having sex in a really rough way that I'm not totally used to. I've had a lot of sex in the past, and I've really enjoyed it. It's been vanilla, I guess is, you would qualify it on the show, but it's never been boring. It's been extremely pleasurable for me. But with my boyfriend, we're having trouble really having an intimate experience that leaves us both satisfied. Honestly, sometimes I feel like a blow-up doll that he just shoves his dick into, but I'm really in love with him. Please don't tell me to dump the motherfucker already, because I'm not going to, and I want to keep working on our sex life. Recently, we've been experimenting with anal sex. As I mentioned, the first time we tried was makeup sex, and I picked a stupid fight with him because I was drunk and I was feeling insecure, and when we made up, he decided to put it in my ass without lube or really any warning. I tried to hold in there for him because he was loving it, but I was in so much pain that we had to stop. A few days ago, we tried it again, and we used a lot of lube, and he went slowly, and it should have been good, and I was really trying to be in it, but it hurt a lot, and we did it for a while, but we had to stop before it came because I was just in too much pain. After the whole ordeal, I was in a ball on the floor in so much pain. I went to the bathroom, cleaned up, I took a shower, but I quickly developed a fever of over 101, and I was sweating profusely. At this time, I was in perfect health before we had sex, and then after, I felt like I was going to shit out my ass and vomit out my mouth at the same time. I don't know if that's normal to get sick after anal sex or what I was doing wrong. Am I just not meant for anal sex or what's going on?
You know what I really like watching? I really like watching professional snowboarders do half pipes and jump on rails and do these crazy fucking tricks. These amazing things. They just throw themselves around so hardcore. But I don't do those things because I can't. Because I would hurt myself doing those things. I've tried boxes, rails, some little jumps, and I always get fucking hurt. So I don't goddamn do it anymore. I gave it a try. My body can't do it. My body can't do those flips, rails, and jumps. Your body can't do this anal sex shit. Some people just can't do it. Some people, it just doesn't work for them. Their bodies don't respond. They may watch a little rough anal porn and think, God, I wish I could do that. I watch the snowboarding videos. I wish I could do that. I can't. You can't do this. And you must stop. You have to tell your boyfriend, who is an asshole, that you should dump. But I'm not going to tell you to dump him because you told me I'm not supposed to tell you to dump him. But if you hadn't told me not to tell you to dump him, I would be telling you to dump him. Because anybody who, after a fight, thinks jamming his dick up his girlfriend's ass without warning or lube is makeup sex is an asshole, is a jerk, is a piece of shit who you should dump. And I would tell you to dump if you hadn't already told me I'm not allowed to tell you to dump him. But if you hadn't, I would tell you to DTMFA. I'm really worried for you because you keep describing these things that your boyfriend is doing that are manipulative, physically abusive. I would class them as violations. And then you ask me what you're doing wrong. You describe all these horrible things that he is doing to you. And then you ask me, what am I doing wrong? Well, one thing you're doing wrong is telling me I'm not allowed to tell you to dump this motherfucker. That's wrong. You shouldn't be doing that. The other thing you're doing wrong is that you keep trying anal sex over and over again and expecting a different outcome. What's that definition of insanity again? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome? It doesn't work. It doesn't work with your body. It makes you feel unwell, and it triggers something in you that made you even feel sick and nauseous and horrible. And maybe it was the anal sex, or maybe it's the asshole you're dating who made you feel sick and horrible. But you need to go to your boyfriend and you need to tell him, it's lovely that you had a girlfriend once who was able to have rough anal sex with you, and it's lovely that you enjoy rough anal sex. So long as I am your girlfriend, you will not be enjoying rough anal sex. To be with me, the price of admission that you are going to have to pay is you're not going to be able to do this anymore. Being with me means going without anal, rough or otherwise. Anal with or without lube. Anal with or without warning. Off the menu forever. And if he does it again, with or without warning, with or without lube, dump him. I'm not talking about whether you should dump him based on what he's already done, because I'm not allowed to say that, but I'm telling you to, in the future, dump him if he tries it ever again. From here on out, you are a woman. You are a woman who does not have anal sex. And if your boyfriend tries to have anal sex with you anyway, your boyfriend is a manipulative, violent, and abusive asshole who on some level, conscious, most likely, or subconscious, is enjoying the pain he is inflicting on you. That kind of person is not boyfriend material or long-term relationship material. That kind of person is restraining order material. Have you tried to solve your allergy and cold woes with various saline solutions and over-the-counter medications, but none of them work? Maybe it's time you tried OxyBump. All natural and unique, only OxyBump harnesses the power of oxygen to treat nasal congestion and sore throat. Infused with the finest sourced plant and mineral extracts, OxyBump provides safe, non-addictive relief of congestion, allergies, cold, and sore throat. It's tasteless, pH neutral, and won't cause post-nasal drip. It's available nationwide at Target. Just look for the brightly colored boxes in the cough, cold, allergy aisle, or go to oxybump.com and enter code SL20 for 20% off. OxyBump, oxygen-powered relief.
Hi, Dan. So I know that you haven't really gone here yet, but I was hoping that you could shed a little light about the Bill Cosby scenario, specifically that he was having sex with women who weren't conscious. You know, something about that, I mean, everything about it is really creepy, and Spellman had every right to pull all of his funding, and everyone should pull their funding, and he's a bastard, and, you know, if there's a hell, that's definitely where he's going. However, what is up with him drugging women and having sex with them when they're almost, like, corpses, when they're dead? I don't know. It freaks me out. And I'm in a pretty loving, healthy, wonderful relationship. However, I can't stop thinking about the idea that this creeper has sex with women when the women seem to be dead. And I don't know. I guess it's just so upsetting. So I don't know. And I think a lot of people are thinking about this and don't really know how to address the idea that there are people who are so sick that they want to have sex with women who are knocked unconscious and like, dead? I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I guess I would just appreciate a little bit of your point of view about this. Maybe there are, like, warning signs that we as women should look out for beyond just, you know, trying not to let strangers drug you. I don't know. It's just disturbing.
It's a simple answer. Why would Bill Cosby drug these women? Because he's a rapist. Why would someone enjoy sex with someone who is unconscious or enjoy raping someone who is unconscious? Wouldn't that be a la necrophilia, someone completely non-responsive? Well, rape is often about power and control, and you don't have more control over someone. No one is more helpless before you than they are when they are unconscious, when you have knocked them out. I don't think that someone who does this sort of thing is necessarily into necrophilia. Someone is motionless, but they are breathing and they are warm to the touch. I think that someone would do this because they want to disable someone. They want to have access to that person's body. They want that person in their complete and total control at that moment. And then obviously, someone who's a rapist doesn't care about their partner's active consent or willing participation or enjoyment of anything that's about to happen to them. So it's irrelevant whether that person is responsive. It may even be a boon to that person, as we've seen with date rape drugs on college campuses and other places and other cases exactly like this one. It is a boon to that person, that for their victim, to be drugged into a state of helpless unconsciousness. I think you're letting a lot of people off the hook, actually, when you try to make a leap from what Bill Cosby did to a necrophilia fetish, because what Bill Cosby did is distressingly common. And with the easy availability, easy access to these kinds of drugs, your online drug marketplaces, easy to pull off. Necrophilia fetishes are comparatively rare, insanely rare. One of the things we tell people about rape and sexual assault is not to put all responsibility for protecting yourself from rape or sexual assault onto the shoulders of victims or women, but to be conscious of the risks, right? Don't leave your drink alone in a bar. Don't accept a drink necessarily from a stranger, particularly if that stranger ran off to get you that drink and is bringing it back. If you see it handed to you directly by the bartender, maybe that's fine, right? You'd also don't want people to feel a false sense of security, that if all you had to worry about, you know, the people who did this sort of thing, drugged women in order to rape them, were necrophiliacs, that's not a large – there aren't that many fucking necrophiliacs in the world. You really have a lot less to worry about. Wouldn't it – it would be great if Bill Cosby's thing was necrophilia. It would be great if the only people who ever drugged and raped women were men were necrophiliacs. Because it would happen a whole lot less than it does. In a way, some part of your brain is trying to protect you from the awful and distressing facts of the matter. That this is not just Bill Cosby who does this. That this is not just something someone with a very rare and peculiar sexual fetish might do. But this is something that a great many men have done. And not putting responsibility for protecting women on rape on the shoulders of women, but that women need to be aware of the risks. It's not don't accept a drink from an unknown necrophiliac in a bar. It's you might not want to accept a drink from some man you don't know in a bar. You don't leave your drink alone in a bar while you go off to the bathroom because a certain number of men might do this. It's not you don't leave your drink alone in a bar because there might be a necrophiliac around. The odds that there is a necrophiliac around, really slim. The odds that there is someone around who might be capable of sexually assaulting you, comparatively much higher. Sadly and tragically, much higher.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling to ask your advice about how to deal with a partner who doesn't always tell the truth and has a habit of embellishing or lying. I've been with my girlfriend for 2 years. We're both in our mid-30s. We live in the Midwest. We have a great relationship. She's wonderful, except that she's a storyteller. And she likes to embellish details. She likes to be really creative and imaginative. And that's part of the reason I love her. But also it seeps into our life and some things that she claims to be true and to be real about herself, I don't really think quite add up. She claims that she has a genetic condition that makes her skin dark and her hair curly. And the reason she says she has this condition is because she looks very, very different from the rest of her family, who are all light-skinned and pale and blonde hair, blue-eyed. I think she's beautiful the way she is, but from the outset, she told me that the reason she looks different from her family is because she has a genetic condition that's very, very rare. As time went on, she's also said that other things are related to this genetic condition. So she claims she has a caffeine allergy. She claims that her brain works twice as fast as other people's brains. She claims that she has some muscle issues, some issues with her joints coming out of place, and a range of other things that she just sort of heaps on to this make-believe genetic condition. Well, maybe it's not make-believe, but I think it is. I've looked it up on the internet. I've asked doctor friends about it, and nobody seems to think that this is real. I've asked her if there's a name for it. I've asked her if she's ever seen a geneticist or a doctor about it, and she tells me there's no need because it's just a cosmetic genetic disorder. She told me her mom told her that she had it when she was young, and she's just known her whole life that she has this. Now, I think that potentially her father is not her father. Her mom's quite wacky, so maybe her mom made it up. I don't know. But she lies about other things as well. She lies about having celebrities as friends. She lies about having gone places she has never been. She's just sort of constantly telling these tales. And I try to dig, and I try to draw out more information from her, but she really pushes back. With the genetic condition, she told me that she can't talk to me about it until we get married. She's not willing to give me more information. I told her that I want to educate myself, and she's really pushed back. With other things, I'll call her out and say, I don't think that's actually accurate, hon. And she'll either make excuses or just sort of poo-poo on what I've said and told me that I'm overreacting. But it's a constant theme in our interactions, both as a couple but with other people as well, that she's saying things that I know not to be true. And I love her, and I want her to feel like she can be honest and real with me. And I've tried to sort of push back. I've tried to tell her that I want her to be honest and real, but it hasn't gone over that well. I wonder if you have any advice on how to sort of help her deal with those insecurities, help her feel like she can be safe with me and that I'm not going to judge her and that, you know, I do love her and she can be honest and true with me.
She is being honest and real with you. She's honestly nuts and she's really a liar. I don't think that at this stage of life, if she's in her 30s and she's still really a pathological liar and a fantasist, I don't think 2 years of you gently pushing back, you reassuring her that she doesn't need to lie to you, you eating her pussy, I don't think that's going to undo essentially decades of fantasizing, lying, and damage. Who knows what she was told by her wacky mom about who she is? Who knows what kind of lies perhaps her wacky mom told her about her parentage? But clearly she retreated into something of a fantasy world in a shell and invented this persona, invented this person that she ain't, that she inhabits, and she needs the world to buy off on those fantasies for her to feel secure, for her to have some sense of place. And she doesn't see this as a problem. And if she doesn't see it as a problem, and if she doesn't see you seeing through it as a problem, your importuning her to stop lying isn't going to fix it. She needs to want to stop. She needs to get a fucking therapist. She needs to be on someone's couch for a very long time walking this back. And if she doesn't want to do that, you're not going to be able to leverage that out of her. I would find it exhausting to be with someone like this for more than 20 minutes. I had a boyfriend who was a pathological liar, and that was exhausting. I couldn't take it. I ended the relationship because if believing the shit he was telling me was the price of admission to be with him, I can't believe bullshit. That's why I wasn't a Catholic anymore. I'm not going to believe bullshit to get into some dude's pants or pretend that I believed in bullshit, right? There was a couple in our neighborhood when I was growing up, when I was a kid, where the wife in that couple sounds a lot like your girlfriend. Pathological liar, fantasist, very detached from reality. And her husband got through it by pretending to be dumb, pretending to be what now we would call somewhere on the spectrum, a little detached from reality, a little unable to pick up on social cues, the shit his wife would do right in front of him and it wouldn't register. People would be looking at each other like, wow, this woman is crazy. And her husband doesn't notice. But people who spent time alone with him, he was a totally different person. It was just when he was with his wife, he flipped a switch in his brain and stopped taking it in, anything that she said or did, just stopped registering. And she thought she was a saint who took care of and loved this very damaged man who needed her. He wasn't damaged at all. He was just biding his time until the bitch died, which is ultimately what happened. And then he had some peaceful years of getting to be himself. You don't want to be that guy. You don't want to be the same person in a relationship with a crazy person who is biding her time until the crazy person kicks it. And the hard part about being with someone like this over the long term is that you have to pretend to believe this crazy shit that they unpack, that they spool out. And if you don't believe it, and if you call them on it, they will get angry at you. They will come at you and come at you and come at you until you pretend to believe the bullshit that they spin out too. They need you to believe it too, just like they believe it. She needs you to believe this shit just like she believes it. And if you refuse, it's going to really complicate your relationship with her. Because the thing about believing in lies is we can suspend our belief for the length of a movie or a play. You can't suspend your disbelief for the length of a marriage or a relationship. You're only 2 years into this relationship, 24 months invested in this fantasist. This is definitely a DTMFA situation. Dump the crazy motherfucker already.
Hey, Dan, I'm just calling about your last episode in which the woman was calling about wanting to support her friend, but also call out maybe her participation in her husband's affair. I recently just went through a very similar thing. My wife cheated on me and then told me about how it was largely my fault because I'm such an angry, controlling jerk. At first, I bought into it and it made the whole thing much worse until I talked to a couples counselor we had seen. And she told me that this was a textbook behavior for a lot of cheaters. Sometimes we think of forgivable affairs where someone makes a mistake and then begs for forgiveness on their knees. But in a lot of cases, the cheater will know their action is so bad that they have to come up with a way to justify it. And they do that by insulting and saying cruel and terrible things about their spouse. The worst thing this woman could do right now is try to point out these things, because I'm sure right now her husband is saying all sorts of awful things about their relationship and her in general. And right now you really just need to listen and support.
Hi, I'm calling about episode 461 and the poor lady with the herpes that apparently works with an entire group of asshats that think they can discuss her vagina at work. I think that she needs to contact human resources, and I would say that that's a big old case of sexual harassment, because I'm pretty sure we're not allowed to discuss everyone's vagina at work.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling in regards to the woman in episode 461 whose coworkers were asking her if she had HSV2. I think the bigger issue here is, why the hell are her coworkers asking her if she has herpes? What kind of place does she work where people feel that it's okay to ask that in a professional setting? She mentioned earlier that she had stood up for this girl when people were talking shit about her. So it kind of makes me wonder, like, what kind of terrible place do you work in? Maybe that's a bigger issue.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you have a question or call for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. And a quick programming note from the tech-savvy at-risk youth about those phone calls to 206-302-2064. Please speak up. Please don't call from a moving car. Please don't call from the subway. We have to have pretty decent sound quality to be able to broadcast your calls and not torture the rest of the listeners. So, sound quality matters. Get to a quiet place, preferably a landline, if you're one of the few people on Earth that still has one of those, and give us a call, 206-302-2064. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Mark Oppenheimer at Twitter at @MarkOpp1. That's MarkOpp1. His show, his new podcast, Unorthodox, look for it on Tablet. Speaking of Twitter, contemptible tweets. I listen to the Savage Lovecast every single day while being aware that I will never have a reason to call. Those are some famous last words, contemptible. That's right up there with God himself couldn't sink this ship. You say something like that on Twitter, and pretty soon you will find that you have a reason to call the Savage Lovecast. The Savage Lovecast, speaking of, is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. We will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.